July 6, 2015, almost 6 years ago, I recorded the first episode of this podcast. Recorded it on my phone. I recently listened to that show. I was kind of taken back. It's amazing how far this podcast has come. Come because of you, the listener and supporter. We are now at 400 episodes because of you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for making the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast one of the top criminal justice podcasts out there. In this episode, I want to talk about some of my favorite moments of 2020 and some of my favorite guests. You do not want to miss this episode. Number 400, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast, a top-ranked show, top-ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for sharing it with your family and friends. If you're not subscribed, subscribe to the show and give us that five-star rating and review. We sure would appreciate it. Big shout-out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. Remember this. Remember always that you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Folks, if you love coffee, you know what I'm going to tell you. You're going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. I do not start my day off unless I have my Lion's Mane mushroom coffee. Yes, I said mushrooms. Good mushrooms, not bad mushrooms. Gives me that clarity, zip, and energy that I need to get me through my busy day. You're going to love their products. Everything from cocos to elixirs to coffee, they have it all. And you can find them at cjevolution.com. See the link to Four Sigmatic. And best of all, you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. Enjoy. Are you ready for 2021? Dreading the new year? Facing obstacles and other issues that you don't know how to get past? I want to tell you about my Evolve coaching. Look, we've all faced and will continue to face many difficulties in life. But I will show you how to turn those difficulties into opportunities for growth and development through my Evolve coaching. Look, I'm here to help you come up with sustainable long-term solutions so you can start living the life you're meant to live. I have many years of experience working in one of the most difficult professions in the world, law enforcement. I have coached, mentored, and trained some of the best police officers, first responders, and numerous law enforcement professionals. Through my top-ranked podcast, I've been blessed to have so many great and inspirational guests on the show that I've learned from over the years. Now I want to pass that education and experience on to you. Folks, book a free 45-minute discovery call with me, Pat Fitzgibbons, and learn about my Evolve coaching. Go to cjevolution.com and get you started to a better you today.
I represent low-cost airlines, and we know a lot of you are not traveling right now, and we understand. However, if you do need to travel between now and the end of the year, now is a great time to lock in some of the lowest prices we've seen in a lifetime. Hey, in normal times, we can save you up to 75%, but now airlines are practically giving away seats. We have inside deals on over 500 airlines. Here are a few sample round-trip deals we found. Seattle to Vegas, $35. Chicago to Atlanta, $85. Los Angeles to Atlanta, $100. Of course, there are some limitations, but the airlines want your business right now. And cancellation and change fees are flexible. So fly somewhere this year, book now, save a ton, call right now.
800-296-1337. 800-296-1337. 800-296-1337. 800-296-1337.
You know, over the years, I've been blessed to have just amazing guests on the show. Every one of the guests that have come on this podcast have truly been special. They've given their time, their expertise, their knowledge, experience back to you, the listener. Again, thanks to all the guests that have come on the show. We sure do appreciate it. You know, 2020 has been a very unique year. That's an understatement of the year. I don't think any of us thought we would experience the year that we did in 2020. But if 2020 has given us anything, it's resiliency. Look, we are all resilient. We can all change and adapt and pivot to overcome any obstacle that life throws at us. I wish I could name and talk about every guest that has come on the show. But here is my top guest, my favorite shows of 2020. Enjoy. Oh, I love talking to this next guest. John Lee Dumas is a massively successful entrepreneur as well as a podcast superstar of Entrepreneur on Fire. If you haven't checked it out, you need to. In this episode, we center around entrepreneurship and why a lot of people should go after their dreams and become entrepreneurs, but why some people shouldn't. Check out this clip with the one and only John Lee Dumas. So let's jump right into it. I mean, you talk to just tons of people. I talk to people too. And a lot of them want to get, you know, take that leap into entrepreneurship. And I know this is your expertise. So what should people take into consideration before taking that leap? Because it's a lot harder than people realize, correct?
Maybe you shouldn't take that leap. That should be their consideration, because the reality is not everybody should be an entrepreneur. Not everybody should be a number one. People sometimes are going to thrive as a number two, a number 10. I promise you, Patrick, number 37 employee at Facebook has made more money than you or I ever will combined times 100, just the reality of life. So there's a lot of amazing opportunities in this world. Not all of them are entrepreneurship, but let's be honest. If they're listening to this podcast and they're listening to this right now, they're probably in the group that actually does want to take that leap. And I'm proud of you for wanting to take that leap, because it's a great, fun, and amazing journey for those that do. And it doesn't always end well. There's not always happy endings here for sure. But the reality is, if you jump into entrepreneurship with the mindset of, I am going to create an amazing solution for a real pain point, for an actual problem in this world, then you have a chance. You at least have a fighting chance. Again, let me repeat that. If you create an amazing solution for a real problem, you have a chance to win as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And I think you make a good point. You make a great point, John, is that, yeah, I mean, maybe some people shouldn't, because I think entrepreneurship, it's glamorized. It's like, you know, everybody hears about it. Okay, do it. But you make a really good point. Maybe people are more successful in where they're at right now. Right.
It's true. I mean,
yeah. That's just a very, very good point.
Now, but again, I think people that are listening to this, you all should be entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody, I mean, well, at least all the cops I know and first responders, I mean, they have that entrepreneurial spirit. They have that drive. They want to do something else, you know, and they've served their time just like you did in the military. You got out. I know you worked in the corporate field for a while. You weren't happy. You were on that hamster wheel you talk about. And then you took that next step. What are the things that hold people back the most, brother? I mean, I know you talk about this a lot. Can you reiterate it again?
Well, one of the things is the imposter syndrome, is that they look at the mirror and they say, like, who am I to launch a podcast or a YouTube channel or a product or a service or a community or fill in the blank, anything. I mean, it's just one of those things where they say, who am I to do this? Because, you know, they've never done it before, so they don't have the experience. And so they just feel like everybody who does these things has experience. But of course not. Of course, every single person had to take that first step at some point on their journey to get to where they are today. And the big problem a lot of people have, especially when they start off, is they're comparing their today with my, you know, 10 years ago, literally. This is like I, 10 years ago, was clueless, wandering around like a doe or a Bambi or a fawn, whatever it is, in a field, just like with these big eyes blinking, like, what am I doing? Like, what am I meant to do in this world? I didn't have a clue. Yeah. And if you compare yourself to me then you're going to feel pretty good about yourself. But if you compare yourself, you know, today, you know, to my today, like I'm that's 10 years ago for me. Like I've had 10 years of busting my butt in entrepreneurship, you know, climbing, scraping, grinding to get to where I'm at now. So it's not the fair comparison. You're gonna make it a fair comparison to be realistic about, you know, what you want to do. Do you have the chops to do it? And the answer is, if you can honestly look in the mirror and say, I have a real valuable solution to actual problems in this world, I would say go forth and conquer, because that is needed. That type of entrepreneurship is needed. But if you're going to say, hey, like, hey, I just want to talk to cool people and get Tony Robbins on my show and like just talk about inspiration and motivation, I'm going to say that's tough, because everybody's doing that. And that's not a high barrier. What is a high barrier? Creating the best solution to a real problem. That is why you have low competition with high barriers.
Oh man, I absolutely loved my talk with my friend Roger Ruggie, CEO and founder of HeroTalk. His goal is to help first responders make them better. Now, in this clip, we're going to talk about the benefits of mindfulness, yoga, meditation. If you don't have a meditation practice, you need to get one. Check out this clip with Roger Ruggie.
So I'd have these recruits, and about 50% at that time were coming out of the military because we had Desert Storm, and you know, folks were now moving out of that into law enforcement careers. Some tough people. Mm-hmm. And on Fridays, specifically at the end of the week, I would have a 30-minute meditation for them. But the way I did it was I said, hey, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take you on a guided relaxation exercise to improve peak performance in both your fitness as well as your curriculum here. Firearms, driver's training, defensive tactics, all of it's going to improve with this guided relaxation exercise. And then I'd have them meditating for 30 minutes. Now, if I'd have said, hey, let's meditate, they would have gotten a rope, right? Well, here's the interesting part. All the scores in our academies, as we did this on a regular basis, started to improve. And the recruits started asking me if I ever missed a Friday, hey, we didn't get to meditate on Friday, right? We didn't get our relaxation exercise. Can we do that, coach? They were curious for it. They were hungry for it because they realized it was improving them across the board. I'd have a yoga instructor come in and I'd say, hey, we're going to do some advanced stretching today. We're going to open up that low back because that's the one that takes us out after all those years of wearing your duty belt. I'd bring a yoga instructor in and I'd tell her, break these guys because they think yoga's for chicks. And, you know, that's a common thing I would get at the time. And then the instructor would come in and I'd see guys, you know, these buff, yoked out guys just collapsing onto the ground. And, you know, whoa, coach, what was that? Oh, that's called yoga, you know. And so we can weave these things in. And like I've explained to a lot of academy directors, it's like, look, you could weave in heart rate variability breathing exercises where you calm the heart before any perishable skills training, but you could also do it before you go take that report call from the rape victim.
Yeah.
To center and balance your mind. So you come in with empathy and focus. It's not hard to do these things, but they just haven't seen the bigger picture of how to do it.
Yeah. And I love it. Mindfulness. And this really, I mean, it changed my life, Roger. I mean, I started meditating probably about 5 or 6 years ago. I miss a day, but usually I'm pretty spot on doing it daily in the morning, 10, 15 minutes. And really, well, let me back up. For me, my day starts where as soon as I wake up, I start my day in being grateful, gratitude. For me, and it took me a while to learn this, brother, but really, and I know this might sound hokey pokey to the listener, but really that has changed my life because I don't care how crappy you think your life is, and I apologize if it is. You always have something to be grateful for. You're alive, first of all, right? You opened your eyes. So I start my day like that. And then I go into my meditation practice, brother. It changed my life. And if you would have asked me this, if you would have told me about this, Roger, a handful of years ago, I'd have laughed at you and said, I ain't doing that crap. What am I? I'm not some hippie. I'm not going to be doing, it's not about that. Like you said, I've learned breathing exercises. This was a game changer for me. So, and I know you're a life coach and you do a lot of coaching, but I'm so glad you brought up resiliency and mindfulness because, again, if you're listening to this, this works. It's proven. There's science behind it. You need to start doing it if you're not doing it.
I'm appreciating the word game changer because it is literally life altering.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And that's the thing that I didn't think, you know, until I started engaging in it and I started doing it every day and I check my breathing. Calming, you know, because I'm a type A, like you know, most cops are type A personality, aggressive, alpha male. I'm not going to do that shit. That's crazy. That's hokey pokey. But it really has changed my life, changed my relationships, changed my demeanor, changed my outlook. You know, brother, I mean, law enforcement is a toxic environment. So we need to do what we can to kind of center ourselves and to balance things out. And it changed my life.
It is literally that. And, you know, when I put on a training course on mindfulness and resiliency. Let's say I'm doing a couple of days worth 16 hours of training. There is no one way. And so what I expose mm-hmm. people to is a variety of different techniques, with the thought being something on this menu is going to call to you. And you get to experience that tangibly. And then you go, oh, I really like that one. I'll do that. Terrific. Because I look at resiliency as a bank account. Mm-hmm. Every time we watch the news and we see something negative on law enforcement or social media or whatever it is, we're pulling money out of that resiliency bank account. We get that hot call. We flood the body with cortisol, more money coming out of the resiliency bank account. Many of us in the law enforcement profession have reached overdraft protection, if not bankruptcy, right?
Exactly.
So daily practice is putting money back in. And many of us are good at training the body. We're getting better at how we fuel the body with our nutrition. We have more knowledge about that. But the one area I'm really seeing lacking is this mindfulness idea, calming the mind. And it's not woo-woo. You want to go back thousands of years? You want to go to a culture that you can totally relate to? Try the samurai. Mm-hmm. You want to use it in modern times? Get this. Most special forces personnel are now being required Absolutely. To train in transcendental meditation. Do you need a more of a sale than that? Right? I mean, come on. You're like a Navy SEAL, bro. Go out
every
and get your mindfulness
on. Every
SEAL
I have on the show, brother, every SEAL I've had on the show, I've had SEALs that hunted down bin Laden. They say the same thing that you just said, you know, mindfulness, you know, some sort of meditation. And you're exactly right. There's a reason why a professional sports team engage in this too. So it does work.
You know, I didn't think my next guest, Eric Salzenstein, would come on the show, but I am so glad he did. He was incarcerated for a period of time, but during his incarceration, he started to change. His message is amazing, and it centers around intention. If you set your intention on what you want to do or change, and you back it up with action, you are powerful and you can do anything. Check out this next clip with Eric Salzenstein.
And you know, I bit off more than I can chew, right? Like this is it.
Jesus,
like,
yeah.
What am I doing? Like, what the heck did I do? And, scared, like not knowing what was going to happen. And so, we got an attorney and we knew I wasn't going away for life, but we realistically, the state wasn't working with us. Realistically, we were thinking 10 to 15 years, right? The state mm-hmm. was not working with us. She ends up getting married to some doctor, drops her whole caseload. That was a huge break for me. The news, and this was my first time getting a felony charge. Mm-hmm. This is the very first time. I mean, I caught a couple misdemeanors. This is the first time getting a felony charge. And so courts had leniency on me. I got a downward departure. I qualified for that. Basically it's where they give you a break their first time. Right. At that point, they offered me a plea of 4 years, a year over the minimum. Minimum mm-hmm. amount of time you can get is 3. They offered me 4. And my attorney said, if you don't take that, I'm leaving. I'm walking. So I took that. And that's where the journey started, man. That's where it began. It's actually, you know, you mentioned my TEDx talk. I think I actually mentioned this in the talk. My first speech was in that courtroom where I stood up and apologized and took accountability, you know, took responsibility for my actions. And I said, I made this decision, but I can tell you, I'm going to come out a better man. So like, that was my very first speech, was in that courtroom after getting sentenced to 4 years.
Yeah. Which is amazing. You actually started, you know, you actually started doing workshops and mastermind groups inside prison. So, I mean, so walk me through that really quick. You get to prison, you're like, holy shit, I'm in prison. What was the thought process after you got into prison?
Well, I got to share this with the audience, and I'll definitely address that. But I got to share, because you said you could go either way. You mm-hmm. hit it, right? Like, we have these choices. So our listeners right now, right? We have so many of our listeners right now at this very moment. They are setting intentions mm-hmm. in their life, and to lose the weight, fix the marriage, to level up, make more money, fix the finances, stop gambling, stop drinking, whatever the thing is, they're setting the intentions to do something, right? So take you back to county jail before I got sentenced. I was on the phone with my dad. I said, Pops, I said, I don't know how much time I'm going to get, but I want you to know that I really, really want to change. Mm-hmm. In fact, I want the exact amount of time God wants me to have, not a day earlier, not a day longer, but the exact amount of time I need to change my life is what I told him. Right. And he said, all right, son, like, you know, we're going to get through this. Mm-hmm. And that was our first moment that we had hope. So I set the intention.
Yeah.
Fast forward a few months, I get shipped off to my first camp. I'm in the panhandle of Florida, dropped off in a completely new world. I mean, I'm in a new world. Like, this is a different style of life. So I'm in this new world, and you just said it, right? You can go either way. We have our choices. And well, I had the intention, remember the phone call, but the thing is, I didn't have a game plan. Mm-hmm. I didn't have accountability. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have clear direction. And so what did I do? I went back to what I knew. I went back to what was comfortable. I reverted back to my means, and I started selling and smoking cigarettes. Mm-hmm. I started, you know, glorifying my past and wearing it as a badge of honor to fit in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I went back to the same behavior patterns that got me to prison in the first place. Wow. Only now I was in a new environment.
Sure.
Right. So like, you hit it. We have like, I could have gone either way. So it took about 6 months before I woke up. The dorm was on the verge of a racial riot. Had gotten in a couple fights, approached by gangs. Like, it was basically either, Eric, you're going all the way, or you need to do something different. Like, wake up. What do you got? What are you choosing? Mm-hmm. And so setting the intention is not enough. And so at that 6 month mark, I woke up out of it. I reached out to my brother, who's played a huge role in my growth. And he was my first mentor and first coach. I said, Jeff, man, I said, I need your help. I've got no idea what I'm doing here. No idea how to make this change. And so he basically said, all right, I'm going to send you two books. I want you to start by reading those. And then we're going to get on a coaching call a week after that. And we're going to, you know, we put my game plan together. And then I had my accountability. I had my coach. Having an intention is not enough. You have to have direction. You have to have a clear game plan. The accountability, support from others is so, so important. So I don't know who needs to hear that message right now, but I wanted to share that because you hit on it. I had that choice.
You know, the topic of mental health for our brave men and women who protect us every day was very prevalent, and it should be in 2020. It's going to be more prevalent going into the next year, 2021. I really enjoyed talking to my next guest, Michael Sugrue, about the issue of mental health with our first responders and other brave men and women who protect us every day. Now, in this clip, Michael and I talk about the importance of coming forward when people have issues that they need to talk about and get off their chest. But the flip side of that, and Michael's going to talk about, is when you have an administration that isn't supportive of you reaching out for help. Check out this very interesting and important segment by Michael Sugrue.
But on the flip side of that, and I have to be honest with you, a big part of this is administrative betrayal.
Yeah.
And I had one captain in particular who, from the beginning of my treatment and trying to get better, he tried to get rid of me and tried to talk me into retiring. And my whole plan from the beginning was to go back to work. And that one single person had a huge negative impact on me and on my recovery, but also from initially asking for help. And that's why I hope if any supervisors, any administrators are listening to this, you as one single person can make or break not only someone's recovery, but you could cost them their life.
Mm-hmm. And for those supervisors out there, I'll just piggyback on what you say. I mean, for the people that are, and again, I know it's easier said than done leaving an organization, but do you really want to work for an organization that supervisors and the brass are not supporting you and they're not, you know, giving you the help that you need to recover? You know, Michael, people aren't flocking to law enforcement anymore. So if our brave men and women are suffering, they're going through problems, we need to do our best to keep them and get the treatment they need, because we're not getting the ranks replenished anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, people aren't flocking to law enforcement anymore, and we need to be taking care of our troops anyway, better than we are.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of a lot of city managers, mayors, police chiefs, they give lip service to, we take care of our people, you know, we're family. Well, the thing is, you have to actually do that. You can't just say you do it. You have to mean it, and you have to do it every single day. And your people will know it. The culture will know it. And those are the people that will feel comfortable asking for help. Unfortunately, the ones who won't ask for help, they're in agencies where that is not the culture. It's not acceptable. It's looked upon as being weak. And you're right. There's an epidemic shortage of law enforcement officers, and officers are retiring in record numbers. I mean, record numbers.
Yeah. I don't think I know a cop out there, Michael, that is not looking for an exit ramp, you know, it's not looking for a way out. And it's sad because a lot of good people are going to leave because, you know, it's the environment. It's not just brass not taking care of them. It's a culmination. You know that, but that's a part of it too.
Absolutely. And what most of the general public doesn't realize is that most law enforcement officers and first responders as a whole, it's a calling. This is something that they've wanted to do for a lot of times their entire life. And they truly are dedicated to helping others and making a difference. This isn't some job they saw on Craigslist with good benefits. And they said, let me check that out and try it out. Yeah, that happens. But the vast majority of first responders, they do it because they're dedicated to helping others.
Yeah.
And when that disappears and people just start signing up for a job, that's going to have real drastic effects on our communities as a whole.
Man, I was so excited and pumped when Christopher Strum agreed to come on the podcast. Now, Chris retired from NYPD after 20 years of dedicated service. And before he retired, he was one of the top interrogators on the force. Now, you would think that after retirement, Chris would do whatever the hell he wanted to do, play golf, travel, do whatever. But no, Chris brought his talents, experiences, dedication to the job and his country to Iraq fighting terrorists with an elite military unit. Chris is also the author of Brooklyn to Baghdad, an NYPD intelligent cop fights terror in Iraq, a must read. Now, in this clip, Chris talks about after retirement and what happened that led him on his journey. Check this out.
Well, you know, I had the great retirement party. I got the gold ring. And the
oh, I read it. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was emotional, you know, I was leaving on a high note. I have to be honest with you, I worked with some amazing people that really made me look like a superstar, and I love these people. I keep in touch with these people to this day. Mm-hmm. It's really like an extended family. My kids call, like my one friend Sean, they call him Uncle Sean. They've known Sean since they were in diapers. You know what I mean? So it's this isn't like a short relationship. So, but I retire and I move to Virginia, and the thought is, I'm going to do construction, and I like working with my hands, and there's some level of satisfaction of doing something that, or building something or fixing something for somebody and them saying, hey, I like it. And the bonus is obviously getting paid. So I'm working with a guy, and I had known this person in New York. And after about 9 months, I'm like, I can't work with this person anymore. So now I'm unemployed and I have a pension. So it's not like I don't have a source of income, but I'm 48 years old. Like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? And my kids are in grammar school. I think one was in middle school.
Yeah.
So from there, I ended up applying for a bunch of different jobs, and I'm actually in my basement painting, and I get a phone call, and I'm debating with myself. I'm having this internal conversation. Do I even want to answer this phone? Cause I'm like, I finally got, you know, I'm on a roll. Like, I don't know, you know, it's probably spam even then, you know, who knew what it was. I don't recognize the number. So I end up answering the phone, and it turns out it's a gentleman from L3 Communications, MPRI, which is Military Police Resources International. And he says, hey, you know, I'm reading over your resume, and, you know, it looks like you'd be a good fit. And, you know, we have this job, and you'd be basically a law enforcement advisor in Iraq. And, you know, is that something you'd be interested in? And I'm like, yeah, it sounds like I'd be interested in it. I said, I'm just going to run it by my wife just to make sure she's good with it, because it was going to be a 1 year commitment. And that's a long time. That's not 6 months, which is still pretty long, but a 1 year commitment is a long time. I accept the job and now I'm going for some onboarding and in-service training in Lansdowne, Virginia. And I'm there for about 10 days. And then what happens is I get called by the program manager to come to his office, and it's me and two other gentlemen. And one of them ends up coming on our team, this fellow by the name of Lou DeAnda. And I'm saying to myself, why are they calling me? Like, are they going to give me the bad news? Like, yeah, you know, you're really not a good fit. Or like, I my mind went to something negative instead of this could be something positive. Mm-hmm. And so I get in the office and they close the door, and two of the other assistant program managers are there. And they say, listen, we're going over your resumes. There's another project being spun up by JIATA, which is the Joint Improvised Explosive Device Defeat Organization. You know, the Army loves an acronym.
Yeah, yeah.
And so does the NYPD, for that matter. And they described this program. And now, instead of just being an advisor, I was going to be embedded with a group of regular soldiers, regular active duty Army soldiers. And the team would consist of a bunch of retired Special Forces guys. And they described the mission as actually going out on direct targeting missions, combat missions, finding the bad guy. And my purpose would be to interrogate the person on the battlefield on the spot at 3 o'clock in the morning. I finished this meeting and, they're describing this, or I'm at this meeting rather, and they're describing this project. And now, instead of just being a law enforcement advisor, I'm actually going to be doing combat missions. And I'm going to be at the point of capture. And my job is going to be to interrogate these demon insurgents that are killing our soldiers. Mm-hmm. So they asked me again, are you interested? Because this is a little bit higher risk. And this is going to require a different level of commitment and security clearances and things like that. And I said, I'm definitely interested. They said, okay, great. You guys, meaning me and this other fellow, Lou, and this other fellow by the name of El, his real name is El Al Madawi. He's an Egyptian fellow from New York. And they're like, you guys need to go to this meeting in Reston, Virginia, in a place called Crystal City, and you'll get a briefing there from the guys from JIATA. Mm-hmm. I'm like, cool. So I get there, and they're going through the magnetometer, taking my cell phone, giving me an ID card, and they put us in the elevator, and we have to be like buzzed in, and I sit down, and in walks an Australian major, and he starts giving me the briefing on this mission. So, being a cop, I pull out my pen and I get ready to take some notes. And the guy goes, there's not going to be any notes here, boys. No notes.
So
I said, oh, okay. I'm misinformed. And I put my pencil down and my pen down. And he describes the mission essentially the way I just described it. And he's telling us about the different elements that are going to be involved in this. He's going to have canine tracking dogs, human foot tracking people, drone platforms, human intelligence people. Technical exploitation people, which is the nice name and fancy word for the computer guys, and an intel analyst that will be dedicated for this mission only. And then, of course, me as the interrogator. So I'm like, I'm in. Like, sign me up. Yeah, yeah. It sounds really exciting.
I love having those law enforcement professionals on the show that are not only Leos, but also have that entrepreneurial spirit, and they have great businesses on the side. My next guest is my good friend, Scott Savage. He is the founder of Savage Training Group. Now, in this clip, he's going to talk about what this amazing company is all about and how he became an entrepreneur on the side. Check out this clip with my good friend, Scott Savage.
Oh, man. Scott, you are just the man. I mean, I admire you. I follow you all over social media. You are doing great things. I mean, you're still a full-time police officer in California, and you have Savage Training Group, which is all over the place. Can you tell us a little bit about this this successful company that you started?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me.
Of course.
And what I would say about the company is, yes, we're a law enforcement training organization based in California. Kind of the goal is to help keep cops safe, help them bolster their professional career. And a little bit about me. I've been a police officer. This is my 20th year of being a cop here in California. I know. I'm feeling old as we're saying that. Before that, I was a paramedic. Before that, I was an EMT. So really, since age 19, being in public safety is all I've ever known. So that means if I get fired, I really wouldn't know what to do. But no, I still love being a cop. It's an amazing career. To me, that's the only career. And I know we'll talk about, I think, a little bit today about why get into a career like that, or why sort of do anything, you know, as a career. But I'm still working today and own the law enforcement training company. And the best part of having this company is getting to put other cops in front of an audience. So other great teachers, other great instructors in front of cops, again, with the goal of trying to help them bolster their careers and be safe. So, you know, if you're trying, whatever that is your thing you want to do, and I think most of us have that, whether it's promotion, whether it's starting a podcast, you want to be in a business, whatever it is, at some point you have to believe in yourself. And there's ways of raising your own confidence in yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think we live in a kind of a day and age now where you can research and get great free training for almost anything you want to do. Mm-hmm. I started the company a year ago, and that was when it first launched, but the year before that was me doing research, and I don't think I paid anything for it.
Yeah.
You know, short of buying, you know, a couple of books, used books on Amazon, I think it cost me $50, you know, to get 5 different books that I'd researched and figure out, okay, these are the ones that seem pretty smart. And then I listened to a ton of podcasts. I read a ton, you know, of free information online. I read those books. I did all the research. And then I kind of launched the company with some confidence and bravado. And again, I have no entrepreneurial experience. None of my family own their own businesses. I come from no background of big ambition. As a matter of fact, my dad, who worked at Lockheed, a huge, you know, defense contractor, my mom used to always tell him, when are you going to ask for a raise? When are you going to ask for a raise? And he used to say things like, well, you know, they'll give you a raise when they think you deserve one.
I always love a conversation with my good friend, Adam Kanakin. He is the managing director of the International Law Enforcement Training Network, an amazing training opportunity for law enforcement professionals from around the globe. I was honored when Adam invited me to present at this training summit in 2020. And I hope, Adam, wink, wink, you invite me again in 2021. Adam is also the host of the wildly successful Tactical Breakdown podcast. Check out this great clip with my good friend, Adam Kanakin. Talk about the International Law Enforcement Training Summit. Now, I know we talked about it. I think we hit on it last time you were on the show, but it is a huge success, dude. We were just talking about it. Talk about it again.
Yeah, it kind of blew up, man. It blew up.
An understatement.
So, yeah. The International Law Enforcement Training Summit, what this was essentially a week-long summit that we put on for free online. So if you can imagine a training conference that you would go to, and this was designed for law enforcement, but we also had attendees from corrections, sheriffs, other criminal justice specialties. We had some security officers, close protection, some military people in there. And it really was a way for us to get training out to people that need it, that mm-hmm. don't have training right now, because everything got shut down. And you know this. You were one of the first persons that I talked to about this. And I said, mm-hmm. hey, this is my idea. Would you be up for it? And you're like, shit, yeah, I'm in. And so what people don't know this, fun fact for everybody, the actual episode, the session that you and I recorded was the very first session that we recorded for the summit.
Yes. I remember you telling me that.
Yeah, which was really cool. And man, I didn't even know what I was doing at that point. but it kind of rolled off from there, you know, and the funniest thing about this summit was when we told people it was free, the amount of skepticism that we received and it wasn't just me, it was all of the speakers. Everybody who put it out there was like, hey, we have this free summit and we have Pat Fitzgibbons, and we have Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, and we have Tony Blauer and Tim Kennedy and Jamie Borden and Brian Willis and all of these massive, massive world-leading trainers. And people are like, what's the catch?
How much do I have to pay?
What's the catch here? I don't know. I feel like I'm going to get screwed in some way, shape, or form. And it's funny. It sucks in a way because it really precluded a lot of people from actually jumping on board and checking it out. But at the end of the day, I think now everybody knows, like, hey, you know, we weren't joking. Like, this thing was actually for legit. Free. We had, altogether, we had over 12,000 officers from around the world attend. It was over 75 countries. So all six continents, all six inhabited continents. And, you know, it was interesting. I mean, all of the major centers that you would think were involved with this. But we had massive, like, for example, Kenya, we had 40 plus people that were from Kenya that
amazing
jumped off, like just random things like that. And obviously major center, obviously US and Canada were the largest, followed by Australia and the United Kingdom. But I mean, Germany, Italy, France, Spain, Brazil, like I said, Kenya, we had some from Hong Kong, South Korea. Man, it was absolutely astronomical. The amount of people that jumped on board with this and the support we got back. And here's the thing with the summit was, even though it was free for the week, we've also offered this all access pass so that, I mean, there was so much content. People were frustrated that they couldn't get through all of it on the free portion of it. And we offered this all access pass that gives people lifetime access to all of the training. Cause man, we put together over 75 hours of training content, worth probably like $8,000 or $9,000. And so we put that out there and our sponsors subsidized it. And so we got it out there very, very cheaply. And then all of that money that came in, all of it went to charity. So
it's so awesome.
We raised over $15,000 for charity. And that went to Copline. I don't know if anybody here is familiar with Copline, they're a crisis line for law enforcement. It's all staffed by former law enforcement, and they're completely independent. So they don't take any government funding or grants so that they can remain completely anonymous. So they don't have to share any stats or any contact information with anybody when people call in, which is actually pretty typical even for crisis lines. If they're funded by the government, they actually have to give statistics.
Sure.
On things, and they didn't want to do that. So they're only privately funded, which is one of the reasons why I thought, like, hey, this is a good place to send these funds and support these guys. So yeah, long story short, massive buy-in on the summit, and it's still going strong. We have so many agencies that are jumping on board that a few members were part of the summit. They saw the value in it. And now we're actually giving the agency complete access to all the training so they can use it for in-service. They can use it for continuing education. And then we're going to be issuing certificates so that they can actually get credits for it for their state. So lots of stuff, man. It's crazy.
Now, if it's just a massive undertaking. I remember when we were talking about this and it was like, holy shit, man, Adam's going to do this. And we were talking about it before. Just a massive success, a collaborative effort. A lot of people helping you with this, but I'm just so glad, brother, that I saw all the stuff that was going on social media and all the shares and the likes, and it just truly is amazing. So for the listener out there who wants to gain access to all these speakers, all these people that were part of the summit, how can they do that right now?
Yeah, well, right now we're in the process of going through it. I don't know when this episode's going to come out exactly, but it's
going to come out soon.
Yeah, it should be set up on the homepage at iletsummit.com.
Okay.
So iletsummit.com. We'll have a new homepage up there that'll kind of guide everybody, give you some information about what it is, and then how to get access to it. And that'll be for individuals. So if you're an individual that wants access to all the training, you can go on that. If you're an agency, click through the agency partner portal and send us your information, and then we can handle that. The beautiful thing about the agency partnerships that we have is it's subsidized by our sponsors. So it's literally pennies on the dollar to get your entire agency access. And the reason we did that was, as you and I were talking before, and when we set this whole summit up, it's to get this training into the hands of as many people as possible.
And I love talking to my good friend, Autumn Clifford. In fact, her no-nonsense approach is what I really love about her the most. In fact, I call her up anytime I need a kick in the ass to get me in the right direction. Now, Autumn is a speaker, Leo, CJ faculty, life coach for first responders, and the podcast host for the wildly successful Changing the Culture podcast. Now, in this clip, Autumn talks about her injury on the job and what got her started on this amazing path she is on. Check out this clip from my good friend, Autumn Clifford.
When you're a cop and you put your life on the line every day and you show up and you spend 60 hours a week with these people, right? And then you get hurt and that no one cares. And then they turn their backs on you. That was so devastating. I remember calling my mom, crying and being like, what am I doing? Because I'm hurt. Like, what did I do wrong? Should I not have ever told anybody that I was hurt, but then maybe not be able to walk, or you know what I mean? Maybe, yeah. Who knows? Like, what did I do? And it really wasn't about me. That's the thing. And you have to realize that. I think when you're going through your shit, it's really hard because it just seems to be like everything's about you, but it was never about me. I just was in that place. It was a really bad PD, very bad. It is known for being bad. And it was a 50 person PD, and then within 7 years they've replaced all 50 people. Like, that's how the turnover rate, 50
it's a leadership
people.
Issue. Yeah.
Oh fuck yeah. Oh my God. It's awful. Yeah. And anyways. And so it was just the PD, they lost a lot of good people. And, but that was the leadership issue. I essentially heard that there was an email that came down that was like, nobody will have contact with Officer Autumn, who's no longer an officer or some shit.
Yeah, the thing that you, and you know this, Autumn, is when shit hits the fan, when you were going through some of the darkest days, you really start to figure out who are your friends.
Yes.
And who said they were your friends, but really don't give a shit.
Yeah.
When I left the PD and I retired, and I had people come out, my friends, and they're, you know, good people, but they're like, ah, you're not gonna be able to do it. You'll be back. Mm-hmm. And then I had other friends in the minority, though, who said, man, good for you. I'm glad you're doing it. Mm-hmm. So, and again, it's nothing compared to what you went through. But the point is that when you go through changes in your life, especially what you went through, and you don't have anybody that is saying, it's like, what the fuck, man? You went through hell together for so many years.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get hurt and they have to, we got to follow what the chief told us to do. We can't talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ridiculous, man.
Yeah. Yep. Totally. And I think here's the thing. This is, so the podcast that I run is called, you know, Changing the Culture. And we were discussing how, you know, really that's kind of been my whole, I've called my podcast a couple different things now. but it's basically really been what I've been about, is changing the culture. And I remember, just to go back, even when I was on patrol, I just remember being so frustrated and wanting the culture to change so badly, because what would happen is we had so many frustrations and we would pull up car to car and we would talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. We'd have the meeting of the minds, and every cop knows exactly what I'm talking about. but then we go downhill. Right? Yeah. So, oh man, this fucking happened. This guy. And then all of a sudden, screw this place, screw the admin, screw everything. This job sucks. Right? But, and then like, then what happens? You're in a bad state of mind. Mm-hmm. And what I just wanted so badly is I wanted my sergeant to stop playing video games. He would play video games the entire shift. Okay. Cause he was burnt. And like, yeah, we can shit on him, but really the truth was, is it was the chief, and the chief knew this. I mean, he would just, and he would just give my sergeant shit for being who he was instead of helping him and being like, well, this guy's burnt out. How can we help him? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we need to change the culture. We need to change the culture of, like, exactly like you said, like, oh, so an officer's hurt. Oh, an officer is experiencing some mental health stuff. Like, they're, you know, they're struggling with PTSD. That call really messed them up. Like, so the question becomes, how do we change the culture? Right. And we change it by one, like, we have to judge everybody else quickly, right? We have to judge situations. We have to judge people to save our lives. Like, why do we have to judge one another? We're all going through the same exact thing. All police officers face the same exact shit. Everybody just faces it differently.
Thank you.
You know, the topic of use of force was front and center this year, and it will be going into 2021 and years beyond. I'd love talking to my next guest, Dr. Darren Porcher. He's retired NYPD after many years of dedicated service, and he's a criminal justice expert witness and consultant appearing all over the news from Fox News, CNN, you name it, he's been on the show. He has vast knowledge on the use of force subject, and I enjoyed learning from Dr. Darren Porcher. Here's a segment of when he came on the show recently. Enjoy.
Is that I remember Rodney King too, brother. And I remember, you know, there was effects to the Rodney King, but nothing to what we're seeing today. And I don't know if it's because of now you got Antifa involved and all these other groups. But I agree. I mean, everybody, and I know you know this, and hopefully the listeners do, but the majority of cops out there, 99% of them are good people. Are there bad cops? Absolutely. But it's not indicative of everybody out there. And now it's just so hard to get. And I agree with you, man. I think it's a serious leadership issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is what happens when you have like things like when we have like, you know, a state of acrimony that's in existence based on what happened in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We need to have police executives, community leaders, and politicians sit down in a room and have a back channel discussion on how we're going to right the ship. The mayor de Blasio, his daughter is one of the protesters, has actually been arrested. So that clearly lets you know what his level of bias is. I just don't think that he's really stepped forward to right the ship. And unfortunately, we have a liberal governor, that being Governor Cuomo. Mm-hmm. And even he came out and said, Mayor de Blasio's leadership has been less than satisfactory in the wake of the current tragedies that the city of New York is experiencing as a result of looting and riotous behavior. It's real tough as being a cop. And then when we think about how tough it is, how that impacts on society is it lessens the pool of talent for applicants coming to take this job as we move forward. The attrition rate is going to continue. We've had precipitous drops in officers that have been part members of not just the NYPD, but we go into Atlanta or different departments throughout the country. Guys are just checking out, man, and saying, look, mm-hmm. you know what? I did my time. It's time for me to get out of here. It's become a thankless endeavor. And God help me if I use force to protect myself or a third party from being assaulted from someone else, because I will definitely now be victimized by the system in which I protect.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned people. I mean, you see it now, brother, in Atlanta, with I'm assuming it's happening in New York City. I know it's happening here in Colorado in some departments where you got the blue flu going on, and you got all these cops in Atlanta just, you know, calling in sick. Doesn't surprise me. And where do we go from here? And you're, I mean, that's a loaded question. So many different, you know, such a broad question. But I mean, how?
I got the answer.
How do we get past this, brother? And I don't mean that in an insensitive way. But how do we go forward as a nation? How do we go forward as law enforcement?
We roll back the clock, and we elect Mayor Bill de Blasio as the president, and we vote Donald Trump out. And that's how we can solve all of our problems. Just ask de Blasio, he'll tell you that. No, it's a slippery slope, man. We have to look at where we are with this, man, in terms of just the sentiment of policing. Who's gonna enforce the social contract?
Yeah.
You know, who's going to keep our city safe right now? And I'm going to tell, this is what's going to happen. Everyone is FTP, anti-police. Wait till the next terrorist act comes. And I'm not fear mongering. I'm not saying, okay, you know what? I'm one that's looking for something bad to happen in society. It's not if, but it's when. That next mass shooting happens at a college campus or a grade school, or that next mass murder happens, then we're gonna want the police. Oh, where are the police? The militarization of police is of optimum importance. We need to have police with the proper resources. We need to stand behind our police. I remember after 9/11, as a cop, you can do no wrong in the city of New York. But as time progressed, things changed drastically.
And you know firsthand, brother, from being on the ground, during the attacks, 9/11, you were on the ground, man. So you know the importance
you know the importance that you have to have those first. Everybody's running fucking away. You're running in. We need the first responders. You know, one of the biggest tasks going into 2021 and years beyond is taking better care of the brave men and women who protect us every day. My next guest, Dr. Peter Killeen, is dedicated to that task. He's a police psychotherapist, author, and trainer. He recently published the first of three books of the Operation Longevity series. The message throughout these books is to help the law enforcement profession learn to live a more healthy and sustainable life. Check out this great clip with the one and only Dr. Peter Killeen. What are some of the biggest challenges? I mean, we all hear about it, but what are you hearing as a practitioner and somebody out there helping or trying to make a difference? And you are making a difference with our first responders. What are some of the reoccurring themes that you keep hearing?
Well, perhaps one of the most challenging aspects of it are difficulty with relationships, their personal relationships, usually at home or, you know, in any type of relationship, they struggle with that. And because a lot of the critical incidents that they respond to are left untreated, cumulatively, it starts impacting them, their view of the world, their affect. You know, we're looking at the mind, body, and the spirit these days, and one impacts the other. So you can't treat one without addressing some of the other aspects too. So with the first responders, probably the most challenging is to get them into treatment or get them the help that they need if they're struggling in relationships. You know, and I know we're going to touch on it maybe later on, but the relationships are, or poor relationships are, the number one cause of suicide with law enforcement.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing is begets another, that if this trauma goes left untreated, then the relationships may deteriorate, and then, you know, they start spiraling down. So that's what happens, basically. Yeah.
Now, for me personally, I spent over two decades in law enforcement. And for me, and I think you're exactly right. In fact, I know you are, Peter, because my personal relationships weren't necessarily professional relationships, you know, people on the job with me, because they get it, right? Mm-hmm. They know. I mean, it's the other people that don't get it. Those really suffered. You know, I work graveyards and nights. I signed up for every overtime shift available. And part of that was raising a small family, but it was the relationships that suffered. I said, you know, I ended up getting divorced after 20 years. That was my fault. I could have done things a lot different. My relationship mindset could have been better. But I think what happens is, at least from my perspective, Peter, and I want your thoughts on this, is from a very young, you know, time in my law enforcement career, it's almost like they cultivated, and they do, you know, they at least, I mean, I was brought up, look, if you're not a cop, if you don't have a badge or a star, you're one of them. They can't be trusted. They will never know what you're going through. And while there is some truth to that, that's so damaging for the rest of your relationship, especially the relationships that matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's changing now. Mm-hmm. When I see it more and more when I'm in the academies, you know, and that people start looking younger and younger to me. But they're very different today, where they seem to be, where years ago, and perhaps you can relate to this, that there was great camaraderie. Mm-hmm. You perhaps not the best socializing, but you go out with other cops and you would get, you know, go to the bar and do something, you know, drink in the parking lot, whatever the case is. But now I don't see that as much. Now we do have, when they go out and their parties, sometimes they get out of hand, but it's because they're, it's not about camaraderie. It's just that they're drinking too much.
Yeah.
Not, you know, so they're losing that. But what happens is that, in my opinion, they're finding more of a balance. They're not just socializing with law enforcement. They're seeking other relationships outside the culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that really is a healthy thing for them to do. However, their nucleus of support really is still the law enforcement community.
Was a devastating year for millions of Americans. Jobs were lost, savings wiped out, businesses shut down, and unfortunately, many Americans died. But we are resilient. We can get through anything. We are first responders. You are the tip of the spear. You are stronger than you know. Going forward, I want you to be grateful for your life, grateful for all the things you have in your life. Remember, it is not ever as bad as you think. Remember this, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. I wish you the best of success and health in 2021. Thank you for making the CJ Evolution podcast one of the top-ranked shows out there. And here's to the next 400 episodes of the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Until next time, take care and be safe.